And welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner is on the controls. You know, I don't often quote the Wicked Witch of the West, but what a world, what a world. Okay, we have an open forum, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT, and even though we're not in fundraising mode, I will remind you, we always welcome your support for KPFT, which you can give at kpft.org. Click on the tip jar, and hopefully you'll pick Think Wing Radio and put a few bucks in there. Okay, I want to start off by mentioning, because I was listening to Queer Voices on the way in, and Kim Ogg was on the show, and I just felt that I listened for a large chunk of time, and I did not hear her name. So I just want to mention that the previous guest on Queer Voices was Kim Ogg. She's running for district attorney in Houston or Harris County. Not sure.
Harris County.
Harris County. Harris County DA. Her site, if you want to know more about her, is kim-ogg.com. And because I mentioned her name, I will say that her opponent, I think the last name is Anderson.
Yeah, Devin Anderson.
Devin Anderson. So because I mentioned Kim Ogg's name, if Devin Anderson ever wanted to come on the air and be interviewed, I would be more than happy to do that. I just felt that Kim hadn't had her name mentioned much. So you hear someone talking, and it sounds like she's, you know, very pro-justice, and just didn't hear her name. Okay. Which brings up a thing that I forgot to mention last week, but which I will remember to mention this week. You must be registered to vote. And you must be registered to vote 30 days before Election Day. We do not have same-day registration in Texas. So the last day to register is October 8th. Since this is August 1st, it's rolling down on us pretty quick. You can go to harrisvotes.com or votetexas.gov. And you can find out if you're registered and if you are not, how to register and where to register. You can go to my website, thinkwingradio.com or thinkwing.org. They'll both take you to the same place. One just requires less typing. And there are links there on each show announcement, like tonight's, that will take you to either harrisvotes.com or votetexas.gov, and you can get sample ballots. And when there's runoffs, you can get early voting, or even for the main election, early voting. Do early vote. Absolutely. Early vote. It's just the best for everybody, but especially for you, the voter. I want to see a 60% turnout for this presidential election. Okay, that's my goal. Now, that's not even a record. I want to see a 60% turnout for the presidential election.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mark earlier at 7, he was talking about how he thought, or someone on his show thought, that there was going to be a lot of Hispanics turning out.
We are hoping, because in terms of registered voters in the last election, Republicans had the majority in Texas. In terms of self-identified or leaning Democrats, Democrats are the majority in Texas. They just don't show up. And that's how it is in a lot of the country. Democrats just don't show up. So remember, when you hear polls and it's like, oh, this candidate's winning, that candidate's winning, remember, don't get cocky. Because the only poll that matters is the one on Election Day. That's the one that decides, not the feel-good polls that your candidate is 30 points ahead or 10 points ahead or whatever. Okay, so what a world, what a world. So here's my starting question. Is Donald Trump this election season's Sarah Palin? Nobody has asked that question. I mean, he is so off the wall. He is so nutty. He is so inconsistent. He speaks in short middle school or late elementary school sentences. His vocabulary seems very limited. And I really think that he can see Russia from his front porch. I think he believes that. So is Donald the new Palin? I don't know. We can talk about it. 713-526-5738. There was an interesting article in the Daily Beast by Goldie Taylor. And her title was Donald Trump Doesn't Believe in America, that his attacks on Captain Humayun Khan and his parents show that he does not believe in the very spirit that makes America great. He used, of course, Twitter. Twitter has become his favored medium of hate. In the article, it says he doesn't believe in the strength of the republic nor the breadth of our innovation of pioneering spirits. Trump demands we forget that this ever-perfecting union was built by a grand diversity of people, that it was built by men and women like Army Captain Humayun Khan, the son of Kizer and Ghazala Khan, forgive pronunciations, and that they give everything for a collective ideal. I think that the comments from Mr. Khan that Donald Trump has sacrificed nothing and no one and doesn't know the Constitution, apparently Mr. Khan is a lawyer, doesn't know the Constitution. He carries a Constitution in his pocket, and he would be happy to lend it to Donald Trump anytime. I mean, that was powerful stuff. In the same article, there is a quote from George Washington's farewell address that we must guard against the impostures of pretended patriotism. This may be a good year to remember pretend patriotism. I think we've seen a lot of it over the last decade. So George Washington still got it right. This is from 1796. The man still got it right. Guard against the impostures of pretended patriotism. Okay, we have an open forum. The number is 713-526-5738, so we're back to our normal number. And we have a caller on the line, Jerry. You're on the air. How you doing tonight?
All right, how you doing?
Okay, so what's got your goat tonight?
Say that again?
I said, what's got your goat tonight?
What's got my goat tonight is, I don't know, I don't think, I think Trump's actually in some ways worse than Palin. And see, this brings up a thing.
That takes some doing.
One of the reasons why she wasn't able to get away with some of that stuff is because she's a woman. I think some of that stuff didn't play out well. He's getting away with some stuff that she, I don't think, could have ever gotten away with.
Let me chew on that for a moment. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I think that when you talk about somebody like Trump, who is a celebrity as opposed to a politician, the standards may be different, not just because he's male, but just because he's not a politician, because he's always been a celebrity of some sort, either on the air or in the news or whatever. So there's that in the mix, but I'm not necessarily saying you're wrong.
That's a good point. There is a key difference there. That is a good point, but you know. But the thing about it is the guy is a politician now. Oh, he's not a politician.
Well, by definition,
right now he's running for president of the United States. He's a politician.
He is a politician. He's just a piss poor politician because he is who he is. So nothing he says is politic. Everything he says is Trumpian.
Well, that's true too. But
by definition, he's a politician because he's running for political office.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, this is this guy is going to wind up alienating so many people. He may manage to get elected, but he's going to wind up alienating so many people that it's going to be hard. You know, as I've said before, he doesn't have a real base in the Republican Party. He's still trying to put that together. In fact, one of his problems is that he's still trying to throw that deal together.
Well, of course, one of the problems for the Republican Party is that he's dragging them in a direction they haven't wanted to go in 30 years. And it's like
longer,
if they support him, actually maybe it's 35 years now because I'm getting old and I'm losing track, because they're sort of supporting him, maybe not kind of exactly, but implied endorsing him. And yet so much of what he says, if you can boil it down to anything consistent, is really entirely contrary to what the Republican Party has been saying since Reagan.
Well, this has been the party of free trade. And everything, and to a certain degree, Democrats have been too. Like you said, Democrats have been kind of Republican light in some ways over the decades. But
Do you know why that became sort of a national gold standard policy, this free trade policy? Do you know why this goes back so far and why it's bipartisan and why it seems so ingrained in American political culture?
I don't know. I would think it has something to do with what happened there in the 30s.
No, it goes back way further than that. It goes all the way back to the founding of the Republic. Because Britain, as a mercantile nation, restricted trade. There were technologies they would not export. They put heavy duties on imports. Essentially, they wanted to use their country as the, what do they call it? The, what's the name of it, Bob? Like improved, when the added value. They wanted to be the added value provider. And they wanted all their customers to be the market and raw material provider. And the United States was trying to industrialize, and it became a national mantra that we wanted open trade because the British were doing so much to suppress it. And that's so, like, we would have great inventions like the cotton gin and this and that and the other, and we couldn't export anything because Britain was blocking all the trade. So that became like one of the national traditions is open trade. And whether it works for us in modern times or not, it really goes back to like 1780 something.
Hmm.
So it's really
about Smoot Hawley.
I'm sorry?
Anyway, what?
What'd you say?
I was thinking about Smoot Hawley.
Smoot Hawley, yeah. Well, that is blamed for exacerbating the Depression. The Depression had plenty of financial causes on its own. Do you know that in 1929, if you bought something on margin or if you sold something short, you only needed to put up 10%?
Yeah, that's not unusual. That's similar rules to that right now.
Well, no, now you have to put up 50.
Oh, you have to put up 50?
You have to put up 50. And that's been the case probably since the 1930s or 40s. You have to put up 50%. So when you had these highly leveraged people suddenly finding the market crashing, they had only put up 10%. Now they had to put up the rest, not of the current price, but where they originally were. And that's why so many of them were so thoroughly financially ruined. And the Smoot-Hawley thing, yeah, it's because we had grain rotting in the fields because we couldn't export it.
I said Smoot-Hawley. Smoot-Hawley.
Smoot-Hawley, yeah.
Yeah. I think I said Smoot-Hawley, too. You know, I don't know. When is it, you know, Trump's going to get in there, and a number of things that he's already advocated would be very damaging to the country. Sitting there and trying to renegotiate all of our trade deals, you know, that's a non-starter. I can basically guarantee you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he seems to think that he can just strong-arm nations into his will. I mean, when you look at Trump's record, and I know this is known to you, when you look at Trump's record, it's a record of deceit and obfuscation and shortchanging suppliers. And he seems to think that these kinds of sort of illegitimate and marginally illegal, if not unethical, tactics, you know that no American bank will do business with him, right? You've already heard that. Because they know that
he's been in bankruptcy four different times.
He's a screw artist. And they've now figured out that he's not good for any of his debts. Aside from the bankruptcies, I mean, the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah.
And he seems to think that for some reason, those borderline illegal, unethical tactics will work on an international scale.
No, they won't even work domestically is the problem.
They won't even work domestically. I have actually joked that one of the first things, and I don't think it's necessarily funny anymore, that one of the first things that Trump would do is just declare bankruptcy from the United States and decide we're going to pay 10 cents on the dollar of debt, and he'll think that's a great idea.
Well, he's already floated something like that. And my thing is that whenever he said that, I thought, you know, there's a small percentage of the national debt that we could probably discharge that way. But that the people who want to do that, we don't want to do that with.
Well, any debt we discharge automatically lowers our credit rating and raises our interest rates. And one of the weird things about the Republican Party is they refuse to raise taxes, but they seem great with anything they do that might raise interest rates. Maybe because banks make money even if the country suffers. I don't know. Maybe there's some of that thought in there.
I don't know. You know, it seems to me like eventually the country's going to have to make up its mind to go, and it seems to me like they're going to have to emphasize things like full employment, and it just doesn't require any kind of change in philosophy or anything like that, or ideology and all that. Emphasizing things like full employment, but do policies that actually support workers instead of penalizing them. You know, and also supporting basically those human resource issues that are so lacking in this country, you know, things like health care and education, job training, etc.
Okay, Jerry, I appreciate your call, but I've now got a couple of other folks on the line.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
I thank you very much, and maybe you'll talk to me later. Yeah, all right, thanks. Take care. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. My engineer is Bob Gartner, and you can support KPFT, your community-supported radio station, by simply going to kpft.org, clicking on the tip jar, and contributing some money. And we always appreciate it because, really, we always need it. Okay, so next up is Jose. Jose.
Yes, sir.
You're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
How are you? Sir, look, you know, to me, you know, as a Puerto Rican, you know, I have a lot of Puerto Rican friends, but also African American. You know, I'm from the East Coast here, but the thing is, you know, to me, white America makes out regardless of who's going to win. You know, well, the white lady Clinton or the white man Trump is a guy that he can say what he wants. White privilege protects him. He says what he wants, does what he wants, says these ridiculous things, O'Reilly and his things about the slaves. You know, if he had said that about Jews, he would have been fired. Now, Trump would have, Obama says what he says about, you know, bringing the Russians in, he would have been assassinated. So this is white privilege.
I'm sorry. Obama said what about bringing what Russians in?
No. Trump says, he talks about bringing the Russians into the email scandal thing there.
Well, as a self-admitted old white man, I can somewhat sympathize, although perhaps not entirely empathize with your perspective, but I will point something out. One of the things that we need to recall is that women did not used to have the right to vote, and they did not have the right to vote legally until white men decided it was time for women to vote. So don't dismiss a politician just because you feel they're white and they have white privilege and they don't care. They can still fight on your side.
The same thing. White men deciding that she can vote.
But once it's done, it's done. So sometimes you have to work with the material you got.
Yeah, you work with the material. What, you vote, you march for 1,000 years and you finally get rights? Come on, man. Generation, people are tired of that same old mythology. That's my point.
All right, let me ask you.
Systemically, white folks, they determine, you know, the salvation of everybody else. People are sick and tired of it.
But to some extent, it's because minorities don't show up to vote. They have leverage. They don't show up to vote. And that's why they don't have leverage.
That ain't. Okay, I can see. See, this is why the discussions between what? Minorities and white folks don't go anywhere because voting for what? I mean, you already just
voting
the blueprint.
Voting for the people you want. If you don't show up to vote, they can't win. Okay, well, there's an open-minded caller. All right, Bob, I think I need you to come back and cut the line on account of the fact that Jose has left us because apparently his butt was sufficient on that. So the open line, we have open lines. The phone number is 713. I don't think he said anything. Yeah, Jose's gone. I don't think he said anything that needed the red button, but yeah, he got a little agitated.
I hope not.
You see, you need to stay put. He was upset because he feels that one white person is pretty much like another white person, and you know, if people of color have to vote for white people, then they might as well not vote at all. Whereas my point was, if you're going to show up and vote, then you suddenly have leverage in the system. Okay, so 713-526-5738. We have Johnny on the line. Johnny, you're on the air. How you doing tonight?
Feeling a little bit better. I got some poison oak a week or two ago, and I'm almost over it now. that's the least of my problems.
Well, that depends on who wins the election, but yeah, it's. I have to say, poison oak is not negligible.
No, it's not, and it comes back real easy if you don't pay attention to the way you wash your clothes, and don't use bar soap, and don't do this, and don't do that.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's not why I'm calling. I'm kind of sympathetic with that previous caller.
Jose?
But in part, for different reasons, though, I suspect, even though I didn't get to hear the entire call because I was in and out. But what's really depressing me, beside the fact that Bernie was treated badly, we knew that before these emails came out. We were saying that for a long, long time. So I'm not surprised at the email dump. What's really bothering me is the way the National Democratic Convention was conducted. I thought it was a vast difference between the Republicans, very positive, like night and day.
Mm-hmm.
But what my criticism falls into is when they had General John Allen come out. I mean, he really changed the tone drastically with very hawkish sentiments and the way he said it, not just what he said. And then you hear the USA being chanted in the background, not only during his time on the podium, but also when that grieved Muslim gentleman whose son was killed when 10 years ago or 12 years ago as a captain. He lost his life to save his men.
Yeah.
His mother and father up on stage. And instead of saying, "We love you," or "Peace, not war," they said, "USA, USA." It's like the Democratic people in that stadium, in that building, were being tone deaf. And that really offended me.
Well, you know,
we have to reach out to the Republicans all the time.
Yes.
That's the mistake that What's-Her-Face made when she did that TV ad shooting a rifle instead of aligning herself with Obama and progressive values.
Oh, you're
values.
Talking about in Kentucky. In Kentucky?
I think so, yeah, she ran in Kentucky against Marble Mouth Mitch McConnell. If Democrats and progressives and liberals, or especially the Democrats, because they're not always progressive, if they run for office and they try not to abandon their principles like they do too often, we'd have more victories. Never mind the fact that the Republicans break the rules and gerrymander the crap out of all the voting
districts.
Well,
you know, and this goes back to what I was saying to Jose. People didn't show up in 2010, which gave the Republicans the state legislatures, which gave them the opportunity to gerrymander. Personally, I think we need a constitutional amendment that discusses not only that you can't gerrymander against minorities, because that's not the only problem, that you can't gerrymander. Do you know that the state of Texas, in defending its voter ID law, its defense was, I'm sorry? Bob is indicating something. I don't know what he means.
Is your guest still on the air?
Johnny, I think, still is, yeah.
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 I can hear you.
When the federal government sued the state of Texas because they said that their voter ID law was discriminatory to minorities, do you know that their actual defense was that we're not discriminating against minorities, we're discriminating against Democrats? And there's no law against discriminating against a distinct political party or political persuasion. It's only about color and race. And we need to change that. Gerrymandering needs to be defined as anything that is intended to advantage a side against another side.
I agree with you. Most of everything I hear you say whenever I listen to your program. By the way, you do a great job.
Thank you.
I will add, though, that the reason we had such lower voter turnout in the midterm follow-up to Barack Obama is that both Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, they campaign in one way, they preach in one way, and then when they get in office, for one reason or the other, they govern in almost 180-degree contrast. And when you keep doing that, you get people pissed off, and they don't want to come back and vote.
But the
so
key
the
word...
Democrats are their own worst enemy.
Yes.
We need to play the same game the Republicans do, and you're right. We need to start challenging them in the courtroom as well as on the streets.
But also we need to show up and vote. You know, we always come up with excuses why elected Democrats don't, quote-unquote, govern the way we want. But the very word governing implies or means getting something done. So if you don't show up at the polls, if the Democrats don't show up and the Republicans do, and you end up with a Republican House and maybe a Republican Senate and a Democratic president, to use the federal level, although that actually is not where most of the things affect your life, mostly it's local. But if that's what you do, then for a Democratic president to govern, he's got to work with people who are essentially his political adversaries. So what he's going to get done is not going to be particularly attractive to progressives, but it might be the best he can do. Because we didn't show up and vote and give him his Congress. That's our fault.
Well,
we got no one to blame
totally
but ourselves.
Our fault, but I'm not sure what you mean by our. I think you're referring to voters. If you want to increase voter turnout, like I heard you say earlier, and 60% is really a timid goal, I think we should be aiming for 85%. And the way you encourage it to go up that high is if you make it possible for people to go to the voting booth and cast none of the above or a writing candidate and give them a 20-character or 40-character space as to why they're voting or not voting a certain way. And when you do that, you're going to see the voter participation skyrocket. Because right now, choosing between Coke and Pepsi is just not good enough. Especially when the mix turns sour on you.
I don't think this is a Coke-Pepsi election.
Not this election, but I'm talking traditionally, usually.
All right.
In regards to Trump, he is no more knowledgeable on things than Sarah Palin. The only reason why
he's less
more ground is I agree with the first caller, is that because he's a guy.
Yeah, but I think that because he's not a career politician or a conventional politician, there's that additional element in the mix that helps to screw up your variables a little bit in terms of what's the cause for what appears to be the favoritism. But let me say this.
Hang up. It's all well and good to make fun of Trump. That's great. But we just can't stop there. We have to take him seriously because he's gotten this far.
We have to vote.
With the help of CNN and Fox. Sanders didn't get any kind of media coverage. And Clinton got way more media coverage than Sanders. So here we are talking about...
But Trump got $2 billion. Trump got $2 billion worth of so-called media coverage. $2 billion.
Like 11.
No, it's more like two, but still, $2 billion.
That's like 12.
No, I don't think it was that much. But you know, there was a senator, and I can never remember his name when I want to think of it. There was a Republican senator back in the 1960s who came up with a great quote, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking serious money.
You got that
Everett
right.
Dirksen. It was Everett
we'll
Dirksen.
The same way.
Everett
have
Dirksen.
A good night.
You too. Take care. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. Bob Gartner's on controls. Do please support KPFT by going to kpft.org and clicking on the tip jar and hopefully selecting Think Wing Radio as your inspiration. 713-526-5738. Okay, sure, let's go to Kevin. Kevin, you're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, Mike. That's good coverage with a lot of discussions. I guess I'll try to cover my two cents if it's okay.
Sure.
The mercantilism or exchange, or do you remember the cotton trade route, what that was about?
I don't remember the cotton trade route. Why don't you brief me on what it is you mean?
When the export was tobacco and cotton and slaves was the original commodities this nation had. Cotton and tobacco went to London, then went from London to the East Indies.
I think the return cargo was slaves. The export was things like raw materials, cotton and tobacco.
Certain banking interests are the ones that financed the Atlantic trade route. That was the import of slaves into the brave new world, right?
Right.
So it didn't just stop with the slaves of being exported, Irish and people from Africa were also being, not distributed from America back to other parts, but slave trade was going on at that time.
Well, the slave trade in North America, not entirely, but largely started with indentured workers.
Yep. Yeah, the Asians and Irish.
No, well, not Asians, but British and Germans and Irish and Scots,
yeah,
and Western Europeans, and essentially they would come over. They would essentially be slaves.
Yeah,
they would have to work off their debt, which could take 10 or 15 or 20 years.
The primary export, which was called the cotton trade route, went out of this republic and back to London, and then from London to the East Indies.
But you're supporting what I was saying, which is that the British form of mercantilism was added value products to the Americas,
yeah,
and we sent them raw materials.
Yeah, it was. We were the brave new world. People think that we were, you know, a runaway republic, but actually we were created to exist for that reason. To the gentleman that's angered, we all know about voter rigging, you know, throughout different elections.
Election fraud is a much bigger problem than voter fraud.
Well, like in 2008, you know, there were Joseph Kennedy, the son of, I think, John, basically had a good article that, you know, basically like 2 million votes weren't turned in. There were, and Ohio was a swing state in that election. Florida was in the one before that, or in 2000. But in the 2004 election, I apologize, 2004 election with Kerry, Ohio was a swing state, and they were basically just, it was a lot of voter fraud election going on. It is targeted at the voter, the quiet majority, like you taught me on, you mentioned that was true. We just don't turn out the vote.
Democrats are the silent majority.
Right, and you're right. But this white man's guilt and indenturedness and all that stuff when that racial monkey organ starts churning, which it is of late, I keep hating to say it, but, you know, I've seen, you know, use case references throughout history how this works, and this republic is no different, except it was built with that in mind, meaning we will, you know, basically, it's a form of Bolshevism even, to the point, Mike, that will basically implode the populace upon itself. And
how did we get to Bolshevism?
Well, the point where you have, we mentioned before, what are called colored revolutions, this one is going to be using racial tension. And it's similar to other ones like we see that's been commandeered up recently in the Middle East.
But how does that become Bolshevism?
Well, what I mean is, you have the media. I think what's name said it really good. Mussolini. And then I'm going to say it, but, you know, when you can't stick a cigarette rolling paper between the media and the state, you have what's called corporate fascism.
Yeah.
What we're doing here is
that's what fascism basically is. It's communism for capitalists.
Right. So the form of Bolshevism, meaning that you have almost like a collective. You have, you know, the entitlement, the dependency on the state, which is, I think, in some forms, socialism is good when it's actually not corrupted. But when you control it in a manner where you can have the masses go against each other, like we're witnessing now of recent, this is not because of technology. We've seen all these bad things go on. I did a good analysis on it. I tried to share it for another show. It's, you know, your Black Lives Matter guy is living in a house that's owned by a steering committee director for George Soros on the payroll. I know it sounds, there's a conspiracy thing again, right? But what I'm trying to say is we have controlled opposition in this country on both sides.
Well, you know, there's a saying that even paranoids have real enemies. So, you know, there isn't a conspiracy behind every bush, but there's a conspiracy behind some bushes.
Well, it's a conspiracy by definition if two people get together and change a tire. That means they conspire to do something.
Mm.
So in our academia, it's been commandeered to, when the word comes up, the flags, the shades on both sides of the eyes, and you go la, 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 la. So
all right, Kevin,
I'm
going to cut you short here because I've got a couple of other callers. I want to ask you a thing, and I want to just make a couple of very quick statements.
Please.
When the previous caller or the caller before that said that a 60% turnout was a very timid goal, the record turnout is about 65 or 66%. So 60% is actually a pretty ambitious goal. So that's number one. Number two, how? Give me, in 25 words or less, what is your definition of Bolshevism that you're applying here?
Where you have controlled factions within a republic that are engineered or controlled, and it would be to the point of you infiltrate. We know AIPAC owns this republic because both parties in the previous presidential election had to say an oath that Tel Aviv is the capital, and it was verbatim. The fonts were different, but I think you should look it up.
When is this definition of Bolshevism like a political science definition, or is this a dictionary definition? Where are you getting this definition from?
What I'm getting it from is, like, do you remember what the Bolsheviks did, or what happened to Germany, or what happened to Spain, what happened to Italy, what happened to France?
Well, Bolshevism became a movement synonymous with Russian Soviet communism.
Right. The form of taking down internally a republic with outside interests is what I'm referring to.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm going to have to look that up.
If you don't mind, Mike, I know you got other people.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that one up.
And for Jose, he needs to understand that the votes on the top end, it's corrupt or, you don't have to ask me that. But locally, like to build a private prison north of downtown for the taxpayer to subsidize $230 million that goes to a private prison company match, your vote does count.
Your vote always counts.
Locally, especially.
Locally, especially. When we have these off elections that 10% of the people show up, do you know that this entire multi-billion dollar light rail system, I mean, this is something I come back to all the time, was approved on like the third, fourth, fifth time it showed up on the ballot by a majority of 10% of the voters. That shouldn't even be a legitimized election.
So general election, bond elections, your local elections,
show up.
Gubernatorial,
show up,
do matter.
Show up, show up. That's the mantra.
It does matter. That your vote does count.
It does. Okay, thank you so much, Kevin. All right, you're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. Some interesting callers so far. We do have open lines, and I do think that if we have additional callers, I will be able to make time to get everybody on for at least a couple of minutes. 713-526-5738. Next up is Carl. We think next up is Carl. Carl, you're finally on the air. How you doing? Thank you for holding.
Good, good. Thank you for your program. I love the the enthusiasm of some of your callers and the history lessons. But this is a historic election for us, a very important one. I watched both of the Republican and the Democrat
conventions
yesterday. Thank you, and it's like day and night.
Yeah. Literally day and night, the light and the dark.
I don't have to repeat that. I supported Bernie. I donated for his campaign, and I knew that it would be Hillary. But I did that so that Bernie would push Hillary to where she needs to be and bring the important issues to light that needed to be brought to light.
And he is one of the most successful losers in American history.
He's a fine gentleman and a great senator and a tribute to this country.
And personally, physically, by himself, moved the entire Democratic political establishment left of center.
Well, and brought light to issues to both sides of the aisle. And I think that, 60% isn't enough. The Democratic Party can't be the silent majority. We have to get out there. We have to show our support for our candidate, for our country, and yes, USA, because that's our country. That is where we live. Immigrant or I'm a Cherokee German. This is our country, and we should be proud of it. We should stand for it. We should support it and protect it.
We're all on the same team, and that's how, for a sports-obsessed nation, it has puzzled me for many, many years why we don't think of our nation as a sports team where we are as strong as our weakest player.
Amen. And it's just too dangerous of a time to have somebody like Donald Trump even get this far. We have to be out there and put sanity in this race and show the world that this is not a crazy country. And she is the most experienced candidate in probably forever.
I think we need to keep a couple of things in mind. First of all, actually, there are several things we need to keep in mind. First of all, when you talk about Hillary, Hillary may not be your preferred candidate. I will tell you that I had a little domestic friction during the primaries because I was a little leaning toward Bernie. Like, my heart was with Bernie. My head was with Hillary. My wife is a very strong Hillary supporter, so we had a little friction there. Eventually, I came to the point that Bernie was serving a vital political purpose for the country and the party, but he was basically a one-trick pony. I really could not see him in charge of our international political situation. But
Bernie did just what Bernie was supposed to do.
Exactly. I agree completely.
And if it wasn't so ridiculous, I would think that the Clintons hired Trump to run because he's so ridiculous.
You know, there's an old story about Franklin Roosevelt. I don't know if it's true or, as they call it, apocryphal, but a bunch of progressives who were unhappy with some of Roosevelt's proposals came to his office and saying, we think you should do this, we think you should do that. And he said, I agree with you. Now, go out and make me do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what voting and activism are for. If you are active in no other way, not everybody can march, not everybody's inclined to go out and hold signs or get arrested for civil disobedience, but the one of the most important civil activities that you can have, civil activism, is simply voting. And I will say again to Jose, he can bitch and moan all he wants, but the fact is, if more Hispanics voted, you'd have more Hispanics in office. It's just that simple.
Well, in the Roman era, the only people who did vote were the ones that were served in the military. And you know what?
Same thing in Starship Troopers.
It's every citizen's right, no matter who you want to vote for, to get out there and vote. And there's so much empathy and people who just say, oh, my vote doesn't count. Well, your vote does count. Get out and vote.
Yeah, well, I'm a strong believer and have been since one of my first shows back in May of 2010. I am a strong believer in universal national service, not necessarily military service, but service of some kind. I think it makes all of us.
I think now would be a great time for something like that because there's so many of the youth that have no direction.
I think that it would unite the country by exposing everyone to people and cultures and places different from what they grew up with and expose them to the wider world. I'm going to have to let you go.
I appreciate your program, and I'm going to go now.
Thank you so much for calling, Carl. I appreciate it. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. Bob Gartner on controls. You can support KPFT by going to kpft.org, going to the tip jar, and saying thank you with a few bucks, and hopefully say that Think Wing Radio sent you. 713-526-5738. We have some open lines, and we still have enough time that we might get on some additional people. Next one up is Claudel. You've been waiting a while, and I appreciate that, Claudel. You're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
My pleasure, my pleasure. As always, I love your Monday show. I'm going to get a chance to try to call in. And a couple things. Like you said, the voting is it amazes me how short our memories are. You brought up a couple good points. One, as you said, when Obama got into office, that's what people say. Well, he didn't do what he said he was going to do. And as you said, people quickly forgot the Democrats had the majority, almost majority. I can't remember if it was majority or almost majority in Congress.
They had an almost super majority. Yeah, for one of the very rare times in American history. Now, of course, you had the blue dogs, and some of them sided with the Republicans, so it wasn't a true supermajority.
Yeah.
But it was, numerically speaking, in the caucus terms, effectively, for most cases, a supermajority. And 2 years later, it was gone because nobody showed up who was a Democrat.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people showed up to vote for the general election, but the local elections, the congressional elections, those things nobody showed up to vote for. And so subsequently, left of center and things that were on his agenda were immediately voted down. I mean, you had
and the apportionment
that said
and the apportionment, which is going to affect us now until 2020.
Yeah. And yeah, he said that, too. He said that a lot of these things that he was pushing was going to take longer than 4 years. It was going to take longer than 8 years. I personally only have a few qualms, one being Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see any real reason why that's still open.
Congress, Congress passed a law forbidding him to close it. That's not his fault.
Yeah, and that's one of the few things that, you know, with health care. His original health care bill was a lot different than the one that finally passed that they've tried to vote down 60-plus times or whatever ridiculous amount of times.
And it's important to note that presidents have been trying to do that for 100 years since Theodore Roosevelt. So he's the first one to get anything like that done, even imperfect as it is.
Yeah, even his now-term protege, Hillary Clinton, when Clinton was in office, they tried to do health care, and that turned into expanded health care for kids, which a lot of people forget that that
I didn't know that
that that's what she turned it into.
So they got a piece of it.
They got a piece of it. So they couldn't get the national plan that they wanted, so they expanded it for kids is what they ended up turning it into.
The unfortunate thing about political progress is that we want it to come quickly, but it tends to come generationally.
Yeah.
It's very annoying.
And I think that's, the, like you said, the important thing about Bernie. I don't think Bernie actually thought he was going to win. But his point and what a lot of his supposed diehard supporters overlook is that he has now forced the Democratic agenda more left.
Because and they see
the
support
that
for
can
it.
Hold him accountable. He can come back in a year or two and say, hey, Hillary, you're not doing what you said you were going to do. Where's the free college? Where's
and I'm sure he will. But he was able to move the party to the left not by force of will, but by force of support, which goes back to you have to show up.
Yeah, you have to.
It was the people showing up for Bernie that made Democrats, including Hillary, look up and go, oh, you know, if we want to win an election, there's a constituency here. But they have to show up ultimately and vote, or else the constituency is fake, and they'll end up making the Democrats back into a center-right party.
Yeah, and I was listening to the, not your last caller, but the caller before. He was trying to reference Bolshevism. I think he caught the catchword, but he couldn't define it like he wanted to.
Yeah.
Because I think what he was trying to do was talking about extreme nationalism meets extreme socialism, and that's where people were trying to kind of put Bernie in a box as, you know, he's an extreme socialist, and then on the other side are the supposed extreme nationalists or the next wave of the Tea Party or whatever the current Trump supporters are.
You know what my mother said about Bernie? She's 94, so you have to cut her some slack. But you know what my mother said about Bernie? I think he's a little pink. You know, she goes back like she was born in 1922, so she remembers like the 1930s and the 1950s, you know, with the rise of socialist movements and then the McCarthyist stuff. And, you know, that's when she grew up. So her notion of Bernie is, I think he's a little pink.
Yeah, and I really think that that's what Republicans were praying for.
Oh, yes.
Was a split Democratic convention. They were hoping that Bernie was going to pull a Ted Cruz at the conference, and I was watching it, and I was kind of scared. I was like, oh, man, he's really dragging this out.
Well, Bernie pulling a Cruz was plan B. Plan A was Bernie getting the nomination.
Yeah.
And then they would have pulled him McGovern.
Yeah.
Where it's just, the guy is practically a communist. You can't vote for a communist in America. And that would have been their song.
Yeah, so I'm glad that he, and I think that he figured out what he was going to do like a month ago. I don't think he was at the last minute.
I think he had a hard time giving it up, man. He had a hard time giving it up.
It was exactly when Hillary lost. When Hillary lost to Obama, it was into late June, early July before she actually conceded.
Yeah, it was probably not long before the convention when she conceded.
Yeah, it was a couple weeks before the convention, and then they, you know, they made up. And so,
although she gave a much more enthusiastic endorsement.
Yeah.
Bernie gave an endorsement, but from what I understand, I didn't watch the whole thing. You know, I do a highlights thing. But from what I understand, it didn't look like his heart was entirely in it. He was saying what he had to say because he knew Trump has to be stopped, but he wanted to be the guy accepting the nomination.
I mean, and I believe the other person needs to be stopped more than I believe the Republican senators and congressmen that are saying the other person needs to be stopped. I mean, I read McCain's response to Trump's messing with the gold award winners, and the beginning of it was beautiful. He was talking about service. He was talking about what the Republican Party used to be. This isn't his Republican Party. And I thought, man, finally McCain is like, he's finally standing up to Trump.
Look what it freaking took.
And then, but then at the end of it, he says, Trump, we need you to apologize and get back on board with the.
Yeah. So he's not disowning him. He's just slapping him on the wrist. I'm going to have to let you go, Claudel. I've got one more caller on, and I'm getting a little short of time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. All right. If you want to take a shot on getting on after James, you can call 713-526-5738. We'll see how the phone call goes. I'm not going to make promises on this one, but if you call, I will try to get you on. James, you're on the air. Thank you for waiting. How are you doing?
I'm calling to support Jose. And okay. I can understand why he eventually just hung up on you, or you hung up on him.
He hung up on me. I didn't. I don't hang up on people unless they get really rowdy.
But you said, you've got to vote, you've got to vote, you've got to vote.
You've got to vote.
And they did vote. The Hispanics helped put Obama in.
And then they didn't show up in 2010. And then they didn't show up in 2010. And he ended up with a Republican Congress.
He just did the health plan.
Well, how many, you know, there...
He didn't even start immigration, and yet he said he was going to do it. So they didn't show up.
Well,
and just telling people that they've got a vote doesn't work. If you could imagine that every candidate for the presidency was black, how many white people would vote?
That doesn't mean they shouldn't,
after
just because
one election,
they might not.
Maybe some would, but after 10 elections or 20 elections, pretty soon white people say, why are we voting for all these black people?
I don't know that Jose is old enough to have been through 20 elections. I mean, that's just a guesstimate.
I don't care.
Now, I have been.
You've got a choice of an old white man and an old white woman.
Well, you know, sometimes.
No choice for Hispanic voter.
Sometimes, most of the time, even in my life, I have held my nose to do some voting, but not choosing is choosing. Not acting.
There's no difference, and you know, and the young
of
people
course
are also
a difference.
Not voting They're... for the same reason. They see two people, nominally different parties, but in action they get into power, and then they use that power to cozy up to rich people and get as much money in to put in feather their nests as possible. Until they voted out.
Okay, and I've got a couple more calls coming in I'm going to try to get to. So I'm going to ask you one quick question, and hopefully I can get a quick answer. So why do you think that happens? Why do you think that
because
politicians...
Because power is closely held, and it's passed along to other people that the powerful elite will trust with power.
And that's because if the 99% vote, the 1% don't have power. It comes down to who you put in office. If you put political...
So, who should a Hispanic guy vote for in this election?
Well,
vote
maybe,
for Trump
maybe
or
a
vote
Hispanic,
for Hillary?
Maybe a Hispanic... Well, I think Hillary. I think Hillary
Why?
Absolutely gives any Hispanic the better option.
Why?
Maybe not ideal. Why? Because
she's
a...
Is she going to do immigration reform?
Yeah, I think at some point she will try, or as Roosevelt
mentioned it,
as Roosevelt said, she has to be made to do it.
Well,
she may agree with it. By voting.
She's not going to do it.
By activism and by voting. That's how you get him to do it. I apologize. I'm going to have to let you go. I got two more calls I want to try to get.
I'll let you go. I'm with Jose.
Okay, hang up on me. Go ahead. Knock yourself out. That's civil conversation for you. Just hang up if you don't like them. Okay, who we got next? I see someone on for a minute and 11 seconds. Bob, the green line. We got somebody. Okay, don't have a name. You're on the air. Who are you?
This is Jerry again.
Hey, Jerry. I got one more call behind you.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, you can't sit there and do that. You can't, you don't always get a choice exactly of who you want.
Not unless you're running yourself.
Yeah, exactly, or whatever. But the thing about it is that this is the way American democracy's always been and everything. If you don't like it, then, you need to change the rules.
Politics is the
art. And not complain and hang up on people and be rude.
Politics is the art of the possible.
Yeah.
Possible being the operative word. Okay, Jerry, I got two more calls.
I'll talk to you later.
Thanks so much. Okay, we got two more calls. I think I can get them in briefly. Line two, who we got on line two? Oh, we're going to do line four. Okay, line four, who are you? I don't have a name.
I don't know. I think you just called me.
We called you?
Right.
Oh.
This is Robin Hanel.
Robin, well, you're on the air. I don't know if you want to be on the air. You want to not be on the air?
I don't, because I don't know what you're talking about. I'm very sorry.
Oh, well, I don't know why you got called, but this is Think Wing Radio, and I think you just hung up. Okay, so Bob, whoever you got with line up, we got nobody? Okay, well, I get to fill 2 minutes. Anybody want to call? You got about a minute to talk to me. 713-526-5738. Okay, there was an article by Josh Marshall on Talking Points Memo entitled Trump and Putin. Yes, it's really a thing. This is another one of those links that I have on my website, thinkwingradio.com. You can go to tonight's show post and click on the link and read the article. Some excerpts. Over the last year, there's been a recurrent refrain about the seeming bromance between Trump and Russian President Putin. More seriously but belatedly, many believe Trump is an admirer and would-be emulator of Putin's increasingly autocratic and illiberal rule. But there's quite a bit more to the story. At a minimum, and I have to watch my time here. Oh, I'm almost done. Okay, at a minimum, Trump appears to have a deep financial dependence on Russian money from persons close to Putin, and this is matched to a conspicuous solicitousness to Russian foreign policy interests where they come into conflict with U.S. policies. That's all I got. I got to sign off in 40 seconds. I see someone on the line. Unless they can give it to me in 10 words or less, I don't think I can take them. Now I got two people on the line. Man. Okay. I'm sorry. Whoever you are, I cannot take you. You'll have to call on Monday next. Monday at 9 on August 8th. You'll have another shot. Just make a note and remember what you wanted to talk about. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. And George Washington's farewell address, September 19, 1796, from the American Daily Advertiser, quote, "Guard against the impostures of pretended patriotism. Wise words still valid today." Have a great week. Jazz Latino is up next.
If you've ever wanted to go to New York for dinner and a show with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, here's another chance to do it. Our raffle is underway now until August 2nd. For $20 per ticket, you'll be entered into a raffle to see a taping of Democracy Now!. Airfare is included for the winner. So get your tickets online at kpft.org. Proceeds from the raffle go towards our fundraising goals for the summer, so you'll be supporting KPFT, and maybe you'll win the most affordable vacation you've ever taken. Raffle tickets are $20 for one ticket and $100 for six. The drawing is on Tuesday, August 2nd at 4 p.m. Good luck from KPFT Houston.
Why donate your car to KPFT? You can free up space in your garage, you can avoid the hassles of selling your car, there's no need to pay hefty car repair bills, and you turn that unwanted car into an IRS tax deduction. In addition, you're helping to make the Houston area better with unique arts, music, and culture. You help keep options on the airwaves. Best of all, making a car donation is easy and always free. Just call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT.